Loud and fuzzy.
This is the Final Round Podcast, coming to you live from the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. And now your host, Chris Marquardt.
What time is it, Jason?
Wow.
You were looking
that
right
is
at
impressive.
You were looking at your clock. I thought we were late. I was starting to get nervous.
No.
All right, perfect. Well, that's a good start right there. Episode number 67 of the Final Round Drag Racing Podcast on deck. Appreciate all you folks tuning in with us. Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you might be listening from. We got a loaded show on deck tonight. Jason has been feverishly working the phones, and as a result, we've got I think it's the most loaded show that we've had to date.
I think you're right, actually. And as I told you earlier today, I was feeling a little guilty about not having more high-profile guests. So I pulled out all the stops, and I loaded us up.
It worked out just fine. Excited to have Mike Beard. He's waiting on the line right now. We're going to be talking with him. We're going to be talking with about his illustrious career. There's tons of stuff. And I'm a little concerned because you've loaded the show so much that we're supposed to be talking with a couple other people later on tonight. You need to keep the reins on. This is a little bit tighter production than what you're used to. We're catching up with John Sear to talk about the high roller race that's coming up Labor Day weekend over there at Empire Dragway. And then we're going to be talking with Bill Fritzky, who's working on a fundraiser for the Morris family, and what a tragic story that is. We'll get into that a little bit more later on. While we were off, I don't know if you caught this, but John Force at the age of 70 won
event number 150, I think it was
150, yeah. I thought that was kind of cool, because at the age of 70, it means that there's still hope for your NHRA career to take blossom, right?
Well, that's the crazy thing about NHRA competition now at the national event level, is that if you look at the average age, especially in the I'll call it the super classes, the .90 classes, the average age of the competitors out there probably is 60 years old. It's not uncommon. I would say, geez, probably 15% of the competitors in the .90 classes are 70 plus. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have old dinosaurs like me that love my throttle stop racing and just won't let it go. And there's still hope.
I know this is. I don't mean for this to sound the way that's going to come out. But is that because they're at a point in their life where they can afford to .90 race otherwise?
Well, I mean, that's probably true to a certain extent. I mean, .90 racing, and not that stock and super stock racing is really any better. I mean, again, you have a lot of, I'll call it, long-time racers racing there as well. I mean, the stock and super stock classes really are, I mean, they've been around a lot longer than the .90 classes have been. But yeah, the super classes have gotten really expensive to run. It's unfortunate that a class like Super Gas, that was originally designed to be an entry-level class for your backyard mechanic, and you used to have a whole bunch of guys that would build a 468 big block that made barely 600 horsepower, and they put it in their car and they go race Super Gas. Those people don't exist anymore, and it's just too expensive to run.
Well,
so
it can't exist anymore, right?
Well, I mean, you could.
You can, but you're not going to do anything with
right,
it.
Right. That's it's... No, I mean, I got one of the greatest bracket racers in the country on the phone, right?
Well, judging by his picture, he's got like 50 years of racing left.
And oh,
he's a young dude.
Yeah, Michael is. I would say, well, I guess you're paying him a compliment, because Michael is not 20, but I'm a little bit
27.
I'm a little bit older than him, but Michael has always had, I guess I would call it, slower cars, and yet he is able to go out and light plenty of wind beacons being chased. And that's the whole thing with the .90 class, is that nobody wants to be chased. Everybody wants to be the faster car. But guys like Michael and, I mean, the other one that is a hero of mine, I guess, is Dan Northrup for a long time. I mean, his super gas car could barely run, 990 at 140 miles an hour, and he turned on a lot of wind lights too. So it's possible, but you just have to have more skill, in my opinion, to be able to do it. And I don't have that, so I need a faster car, and most people don't have the skill that Michael Beards and Dan Northrup's have, so that's why those guys, I think, in general, are successful being chased like they are.
Well, I mean, there's always the option of asking Michael himself. He's waiting in the wings. Michael is on the line, man. Appreciate you tuning in and hanging out with us for a little while tonight, man. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I don't know that you have to have a faster car, but you need to have a consistent car as well as some strategy to work with things. I'm pretty open and honest about telling people that I'm dialed honest the vast majority of the time.
Yep.
So you have to race me like I'm dialed honest, because I am. Now, granted, you don't have nitrous to work with in the .90 classes, but don't forget, you're allowed to play with your shift points. So many people have automated shifters these days, and I think some people have forgotten that, you know, yeah, it's nice to be consistent and shift the same all the time, but that's another club in your bag. You can change your shift point to change your ET and change the look of the race down track.
Right. Yeah, and I will say that I raced one of our regular Western New York Super Rod Association competitors, Len Alexi, and I never raced him before, and he has his throttle stop come on like 2 seconds out into the run, and he's got a big block in the car, and I didn't know anything about his car or anything else, and so we leave the line, he gets out on me, I pull up alongside of him, pass him, and I'm like, oh, race over. I don't know what the heck happened, but I'm by him and I'm good. And I took my foot out of the throttle just as his throttle stop shut off, and it was, oh no, I am in big trouble. So yeah, if you change the look of that, people are not expecting that for sure. And you can definitely, but I guess I will say, here's the thing.
That's shifty. I like
Oh
it.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to have a lot of, the best way, in my opinion, to be able to race like this would be to have multiple combinations that you could call up at any point in time to be able to then race. But you have to have a lot of runs to be able to be...
I was just going to say, think of the number of passes and the amount of notes that you have to have
right.
in order to have an arsenal of 3 or 4 different setups.
That's right.
Just to mess with people.
That's right.
You know, and mess with people in terms of changing up the race and give yourself an
advantage. And that's part of why guys like Michael are really good, because... Mm-hmm. Michael, how many weeks out of the year do you race?
As many as I can. When I lived in North Carolina, we were typically gone either the end of January or beginning of February, and you ran to the end of November. Now being up in Ohio, and really a lot of it having to do with my businesses and,
right.
and promoting events and, you know, working on the marketing stuff for other people's big money events, has really kind of tamped down my time. Like, I didn't get out this year until really the first race that didn't rain out was Memorial Weekend.
Yeah.
So a little rusty to start out, particularly because the last 2 years my car had spent more time broke than anything else. I was just happy to get out to a racetrack again this year, let alone to have any success at it.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I love, you know, about Michael's racing is that, I mean, I don't think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, I don't think you would call yourself a large budget racer at this point in time.
And no, someone else did once on, I think it was the Drag Race Results message board, somebody talking about, and you know, I'm one of the co-promoters in Loose Rocker Promotions, and somebody mentioned, oh, all these promoters are rolling in it, and I posted a picture of my 1500 pickup, open trailer,
yep.
and the easy up and the lawn chair set out, and I'm like, yep, sure rolling in it over here.
Yeah, and I was telling Chris before we went on the air that, you know, I've actually known you for a long time, and basically it was, you know, when the internet was invented, that's when you and I basically got introduced to each other. And, you know, I remember seeing you, I think it was at Columbus a bazillion years ago. And like I said, I mean, it was pickup truck and an open trailer in your car. And at the time, I think it was a Charger that you had?
I've got that little Turismo.
The Turismo. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking of. Yep. The Turismo. But you did what you could afford to do to go out to the races, right? And that, yeah, you weren't the fastest guy out there, but you practiced a lot.
And you mentioned that earlier about me never having the fastest stuff. That's not necessarily for lack of trying, but yeah, you've got to operate within such and such a budget. In bracket racing, I started out going 14s with a junkyard motor on street tires, like a lot of people did.
Sure.
In our younger days. Nowadays, I think when somebody goes, oh, I want to get involved in bracket racing, they go out and buy a 650 eighth mile car and go racing. If you want to see the land that time forgot, where you and I, the new dinosaurs, came from, I made a trip to Northern Michigan Dragway this year. So, have you ever heard of Saginaw?
I mean, I know the city, but not the drag strip.
And people think of Saginaw as pretty far north. So this is like 2.5 hours past Saginaw.
Okay.
So if you want to get the Northern Michigan Dragway, you start heading north, and then you keep going north until you end up in 1990. Because I rolled in it, you have not seen so many campers, not total homes and stackers, campers and tents and low-buck beginner budget bracket cars. You know, hey, I got the 79 Camaro, I'm going to swap the rear end, throw a set of headers on it, and maybe a set of tires, and there's my race car. Like, it's where we started. It was so right. Cool to see that end of things still alive, because I think we've kind of gotten a little jaded over the years where, oh, I have to have this. Jason has to go faster. I got to go faster. I got to have the trick of the week. Oh, I've got to have a grid and all. No, you don't. You can, you know, and there's certainly advantages to certain things, but nothing's going to beat driving ability when it comes down to it. And you know, I started out in stock eliminator going, you know, in IHRA, it was mainly eighth mile stuff. So we're on like 730s, 70s, like 690s was really fast in stock. And then all these big block crate motor cars were going mid sixes. So I go super stock racing. Okay, now I'm going mid sixes. And everybody else is going six flat. And I'm like, always going to be behind the curve. So I stopped worrying about all of that.
Yeah.
And just concentrate on executing a good run, you know, regardless of what's in the other lane. But as I've gotten faster, so now I'm the mid 6 second car, now I'm getting to chase a few more people, and the guys that are still in these slow cars, like Joe Tharp Jr., they call him 00 Joe for a reason. And just because that car is a ratty looking, literally rattle can primer Oldsmobile.
Right.
I think it's like high eights, if I recall. He just laid me out at Pittsburgh. Like, and Joe and I have known each other forever. I know what I'm up against. You know, you take your disadvantages and turn them into your advantages.
Sure.
Like, I know he's going to drop down there.
Yep.
Still missed. Because he dropped harder than you think.
Right. Right.
What was the debate that you got on Facebook this week? There was a car that used to belong to Phil, and it disappeared. It went someplace else. And
oh, that was the Super Stocker. Yeah, so that was Phil's Super Stocker. So,
That was before you were driving for him, I assume.
Oh, yeah. That was way before I was driving for him. I mean, I was single digits years old at that point in time.
Car didn't look that old.
Well, the
picture didn't look that old.
That picture was pretty old because that was so Westfall and Westberg still owned the car at that point in time, and Phil bought it from them in the early 70s. I want to say 73, 74. So, I mean, that picture was pretty old. Michael, have you ever raced I'll call it a dot 90 car?
Technically once, Matt Zapp had an old Camaro. We went to a Pro-Am race, a Quaker City Raceway, and he's going to throw me in. We're going to run Hot Rod, and Quaker City is at a bit of an elevation and it's uphill from 1,000 foot on.
Yeah.
And he's like, I got no idea what we got here. So my first lap, I've got zero in the box and zero in the throttle stop. And I'm like 30 on the tree and it goes like 91 flat out. I'm like, cool, we're going to go make six time runs tomorrow.
Right.
You know, we up the launch RPM and harden off the tires, and I found a teen spot on the tree. And then the next day, I win the first round. Like, I'm hit the tree and wide open to the wood. It goes 91 or so.
Yeah.
And then the air gets worse. So it's, I'm like, man, it's probably going to go 93 or 94. Got any weight we can take out? No. We can drain a quart of oil. No way, man. They're like, I'm throwing out all the stock and super stock tricks. And I'm like, got any RPM left? He's like, no, this is optimum right here. I said, what's that alternator belt worth? He's like, I don't know, 3 or 4? Perfect. So we pop the alternator belt off, and as it turns out, it's worth about a tenth.
Oh, really? Wow.
Which I discovered at about 1,100 foot. I also discovered that he didn't have a mirror on the side, and I got somebody, Ed McLeaf, I think it was.
Okay.
Much, much faster than me, and I broke out, but I don't know. But yeah, so there was my Thought 90 experience.
Yeah. So I mean, the difference is that you could take a guy that foot brakes like Michael and put him into a Thought 90 car, and they can be pretty good. You take a guy like me that spent my entire racing career in an electronics car, and now you put me in Michael's car, I would be horrid, horrid, just really, really bad. And I've tried to foot brake my Corvette a couple of times, and I'm just not good at it. I don't know.
I can be horrid in my car too.
What was that, Michael?
I said, in all fairness, I can be horrid in my car too.
we all have our days for sure. But yeah, I mean, foot braking a car, or you know, just even full tree racing. I'll even say that, you know, take the electronics away. I mean, it takes practice, and you're not going to be good overnight. It's one of the things that I guess bugs me about even the Dot 90 racing too, that there's a lot of guys, especially on the 410s Pro Tree, you're not going to more than likely be able to take your car on the very first pass and start cutting 00 lights on a 410s Pro Tree if you've never done it before. You got to work on your stuff, and you got to practice. It just bugs me a little bit, I guess, and maybe it's because I'm old school, that guys don't want to do that. They want what's easy for them. And I think, quite frankly, I think that's one of the allures of bracket racing, is the fact that, you know, it's easier from that standpoint, because you can take your combination, whatever it is at that point in time, and try to go compete at it. It might not be optimal, but you don't necessarily have to change anything, if you will. Where if you want to try and fit your car into a particular class, yeah, you're going to have to change stuff. That's the way it goes.
You actually reminded me that it wasn't what we would call a Dot 90 class, because we're thinking throttle stop stuff here. But when I lived in North Carolina and my car was a crate motor stocker, there's this PTRA, the Pro Tree Racers Association.
Yep.
Runs down around North Carolina, and they've got a number of index classes, but they're no throttle stop.
Okay.
And one of them was a 7.0 index. And
yep.
Again, my car would go 690s at the time. It was a 400 Pro Tree, but they allowed deep staging.
Okay.
I'm going to illustrate for you just how horrible my car is. I roll it in deep, leave on the foot at, I actually left it 4 grand one time, and it held. Like 36 to 3,800. I'm 40s on a 400 tree.
Yep.
Deep and leaving at 4 grand.
Yep.
The F-body Mopars do not move the first 10 inches. It may make noise, it may pull the wheels up, but it don't do anything the first 10 inches. Forget it.
Now, have you always been in a Mopar?
What's that?
Have you always been in a Mopar? I've always, my recollection, I can't say that I've ever seen you own anything but a Mopar.
I haven't owned anything else. I've driven a couple of odd things, Zapp's Camaro, and I drove a super stock BX 277 cubic inch modified type Camaro for Andrew Smith out of Texarkana. You know, a couple races here and there. I even drove a Thunderbolt clone one pass years ago.
That's cool.
It is cool.
But you were talking about finding a class and having to make your car fit it.
Yeah.
Well, because I was trying to deep stage to hit the tree, which I still wasn't accomplishing, in the 7.0 index deal, the first pass that I made, I think the car went like 7.08 or something. So very similar to the Matt Zapp Camaro hot rod story. I go, okay, well, I pull the second battery out, pop the air cleaner off, turn the shift points up, it goes 703. I'm like, man, I just wasted $60 today. Wait a second. Now, also going back to the beginning of the conversation, I'm going to pick up an open trailer guy. So I pull the car up on the open trailer, dive underneath there, pop the drain plug. That's good. Knock about a quart of oil out of the thing. The third pass, it went 7 flat. And it was like winning the race. I'm like, that was awesome.
Right.
Having gone it instead of having the fast car and detuning it to run an index, it was really, really fun. And on the flip side, having the no throttle stop deal, there are other classes. They had a 6.0 index and a 5.30 index. And those guys hadn't gotten into sandbagging at the time. And no throttle stop, the 6.0 guys are set up to go 6.0. They leave together. They finish together. And I actually hung on the fence and watched that. It was
right.
Fun to watch again. It was cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And I have to say that I really wish... I would love to get a class like that going. I don't know if we could get the kind of support behind it, but I'd be all in for, yeah, let's take all the electronics essentially out of the car and go race. I mean, again, that's old school, you know, dinosaur Jason Oldfield, I guess. And, you know, I don't know that most people are willing to do that these days, but yeah, I'd be totally for it. I know that Dragway 42... they have some index classes like that. At least they used to last year, that they were pretty popular. They had a pretty good following out of Dragway 42.
Yeah, actually, Terry Knott has the Red Dart Sport that I used to drive in stock. He's been running the 1150 index class out there. And he's actually gotten really, really good at it. He's a lot sharper than I will ever be on a Pro Tree. And that car will go by 1120s with him in it. And what we did with his car is just set up a high gear shift light. So instead of spot dropping on a track position,
yep,
we're dropping on RPM.
Oh, it's a good idea.
With an autometer playback tech, you can set up programmable shift lights. You know, it detects, you know, when it sees more than 500 RPM rev drop, it knows that you've shifted. So it advances to the next shift point that you've set up. So yep, we just set up 0.3 at such and such an RPM. And he figured out what RPM to just deadlift, you know, not hit the brakes. It turns out for his car to be car length and a half, 2 car lengths before the 1,000 foot, and it'll go 1150.
Yeah.
And I stood up at one of those races late last year to watch him. They're in the semis. All 4 cars in the semis went 1150 dead on. I'm like, these guys ain't playing. But the funny thing was Terry blew the tires off. And immediately he just goes, well, I ain't holding anymore. And he just drove the other guy the whole way down the racetrack and went 1150.
Yep.
We find out until the next day that there were cords hanging out of the tires. So he comes back to the finals.
I've
20 grand with cords hanging out because I'm dumb.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to admit it, but I have to say that I am guilty of that. I have run my tires to the end of the season and, you know, then, you know, taking the car home, put it up on jack stands and got underneath it and was like, eek, what the heck are you doing?
In the finals, Derry's car does this giant wheel stand. It hooks perfectly, and he runs it to shift point 3. Light comes on, he deadlifts, and it goes like 51 or 52. He wins the race. The semis and finals, he runs 1.5, 2 hundredths apart and like 13-mile-an-hour different.
Yeah.
Hilarious. So there's always some neat driving going on. I like some of these different kind of challenges. It's not something I do all the time, but, you know, similar to open comp,
yep,
where you qualify and then they set your dial in or index at a tenth quicker than that. But before I forget, I think they are doing some of that no throttle stop type index stuff around Maple Grove Raceway, aren't they? And isn't that what the Northeast Sportsman Nationals, I think that's coming up at Beaver Springs. I'd have to dig around into that, but I believe they're doing some index racing. So,
oh, I guess honestly, I haven't heard. I mean, I know, you know, you have Rob Keister that runs the Mid-Atlantic Super. Well, I guess I'm not sure the exact name of the series. I call it the Mid-Atlantic Super Gas Association, but he runs Super Street and Super Comp to, I think it's the Mid-Atlantic.90 Association, actually, now. But anyways, so I know Rob is doing that stuff. But, yeah, I actually didn't hear of anything that, said it was at New Media?
Yep, New Media. Let's see, August 31st through September 1st. Let's see, 10.0 index, 1150 index. Pro Dial, which is, you know, Handicap Pro Tree, but let's see, 1250 index, a lot of stuff on there. But
yeah, and
they've got
that
regular 10 grander and 5 granders for Super Pro too. So there's index racing and regular bracket racing. So a little something for everybody.
Yeah, that's cool. I have to say that, you know, the Handicap Pro Tree racing too, that's something that I would like to try. I remember the really old days of Pro Gas when it was Handicap Pro Tree like that. But it really wasn't until recently that I kind of started to see that being competed more. But yeah, for 30 years, I never saw a Handicap Pro Tree race. But it seems like it's kind of catching on now. And heck, I know the NHRA Division I Open at Cayuga, they've been running a Super Street, Super Gas, Super Comp combo race there for the last 3 or 4 years, and that's, you know, kind of what that is there, right?
I would guess. I haven't witnessed that myself. Or are they running them down to one in each class and then running them off, or are they just kind of mixed in?
I think it'd be fun. Well, there you go. Anyone interested in doing that, they can go down to New Media for Labor Day weekend. And sounds like there's going to be a class down there for you. Now, before I would say, unfortunately, I would say Chris has kind of given me the stink eye here. I tend to be long-winded, so we're already 26 minutes past the hour, which doesn't surprise me.
The way that he had all that information and all the advertising and brochures that Michael does, I was wondering if maybe he had done the brochure for that and he had all the information right there handy because it was right there in front of him.
I guess it's possible with staging light, right?
I didn't do that particular one, but probably about half of the big money races out there probably have done, either currently or in the past. I got my start with a drag race results series years ago, and when Danny Sons ran that, and then he put me in contact with Mike Fuquay and Dave Zerlag, who started the Jegs US Open, which was really the first big money bracket race that had round prizes and things like that. That was kind of Zerlag's baby that we've all copied since then.
Right.
And then I got the World Foot Break Challenge, Spring Fling, work with Peter Biondo and Luke Bagacki and his races. So been fortunate to have my fingers in a lot of very successful events and work with some very good people in the industry.
Have you ever had to do graphics at the racetrack between rounds? Like, do you keep a backup computer in the trailer just in case?
I don't have my equipment with me, but I have lettered cars at the racetrack before, and you can kind of see them get a little more lettered up as the rounds go.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, the staging light. I mean, staging light is probably a lot of your business is the drag racing flyers and stuff like that. But I mean, it's not just that, right?
Again, event flyers, big checks, run stickers, and the other end of it is usually just decals for race cars. You know, competition number packages, that sort of thing. And of course, Loose Rocket Promotions, where we put on 6 events a year of different types, like we talked about earlier.
Right. Yeah.
And my own personal racing. So I can't really make a living at any one thing, but you do 5 or 6 things and do them all half decent, and it ends up being half a living, and life is good.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, clearly I want to make sure that we get an opportunity. I mean, so for Loose Rocker, so I mean, your next race is coming up in November. But we were talking, so you're doing a race, you're putting on a race down in Alabama, was it?
That's a customer project. It's coming up in October. But I was just working on the flyer for tonight.
Okay, and The next loose, you said you, I think you had two more loose rocker races left for the season, and when and where are those?
Yeah, the ones coming up, they're both going to be at Piedmont Dragway. We're back-to-back weekends, same format except for the classes. It'll be 10,000 to win Friday, 20,000 to win on Saturday, 10,000 to win on Sunday, all for a $380 entry fee. Smoking good deal. Those events used to be a 5, a 20, and a 5. Because of the racer support, the growth that we'd seen over the years, consistently year over year over year, we made that a 10, 20, 10 for the same weekend entry fee. So that was our way of giving back to the racer and saying thanks to them. The first one that will be coming up is November 22nd through the 24th. That is our racertees.com American Door Slammer Nationals presented by McCarty Auto Parts. That's a door car only box race. We do permit left-hand steer roadsters, but there's no dragsters, no center steer cars, no altereds. So door cars, specialty race. And then the following week, Thanksgiving weekend, we call it the Thanksgiving tradition, Piedmont Dragway, Bob Harris had actually started the 20 grand foot brake race many, many years ago. And I had gone and competed at that event for many years. The track had gone through a couple different ownership changes, and eventually they decided that they didn't want to do the race anymore. And that's actually how Loose Rocker got started.
Really?
We're Anthony Walton, my now partner, we're sitting around bumming, man, somebody ought to do the 20. Somebody ought to do the 20. He's like, you want to rent a racetrack? No. I just want to go race. Come on, man. I had met Anthony from doing a couple of event flyers for him. He'd started getting into race promotion at his local track, Coastal Plains Raceway in Jacksonville, North Carolina. And we resurrected the 20. And the very first year, we had over 190 cars. And we said, I think we've got something here. You know, instead of going online and complaining about this race or that race and saying, well, why don't they do this and they should do it that way? Yeah, tired of seeing people complaining about how races were run. Well, why don't we just do it and do it the way we think it ought to be done? And if people like what we do, they'll show up.
Right.
And that's kind of happened over the years. So, yeah, November 29th through December 1st. And Thanksgiving falls late this year, so we move our schedule right with it. So, you know, he's got Thanksgiving on Thursday the 28th this year, and we start racing on Friday the 29th, 10, 20, and 10, foot brake only. So a couple of specialty events and a bookend our season.
Let's talk about your car for a second. Is that an Aspen?
1980 Plymouth Velare, so the sister car.
Cool. I just think that's so cool. What on that is original? What on it has been changed? I mean, obviously it's a race car, so there's some stuff that's been done to it. Tell me a little bit about the car itself.
Well, I bought the car from Jeff and Zach Ross as a turnkey iCrate motor, IHRA crate motor stocker. Ran 1160s or so in the quarter mile, mid sevens at the time, and just steadily worked on it as the budget allowed over the years with Tim Sloan at Sloan Racing Engines. And we picked that car up to 690s in the eighth mile. I think it had been 1080s, 1090s in the quarter, and set a couple IHRA world records with it. Fast forward to 2011, we decided to, with my wife's blessing, she actually said, I think that's a good idea. We built a 2009 Dodge Challenger 5.9 liter drag pack, fuel injected 360 to go super stock racing.
Right.
that engine combination is actually rated 50 horsepower less than the crate motor was. And that's when my wife said, sure, sounds like a good idea. You know, you've got something where I could compete in super stock, not go fast, but would have something. It's the cheapest that I could possibly get involved in super stock.
Sure.
So I would definitely be getting chased a whole lot more by a whole lot faster cars, but a different style of racing, and I would be a little faster for when I go bracket racing. And because it wasn't a full tilt boogie super stock, I kind of referred to it as a big cam stocker and a baby super stocker. It's something I could go bracket race and not feel bad about it. And I did that a lot. Particularly living in North Carolina, it's pretty normal to be double entered several days a week most of the year. So it got a lot of latch foot on it. And so, 2012 back half to it, so it is a thing. But it's still stock bench seat in it. Still got the fact ash and that fun stuff. Now in 2016, I broke the crankshaft in it, at which point I decided I was done with class racing, at least for a while. So the short block is now a 408 stroker, but the top end of the motor is still super stock legal. So if I ever get the bug, crank rods and pistons, and we're back in business.
Cool.
But through all these iterations of the race car, it is the only car on the planet that has won a stock world championship, a super stock world championship, and a bracket finals.
That's cool.
Coolest little tidbit.
I like that.
Yeah, that's super cool. I told you before. I mean,
Michael's, who else would bother attempting that?
Yeah, I mean, Michael's high profile, right? I mean, right. He's got a lot. I mean, and we've just scratched the surface. And unfortunately, because of, I'm hoping that this is the first of many times that Michael will be on the show.
We could do a whole show just on the Velari.
Oh my God, there's no doubt. I mean,
just in the quick skips that we just had.
Yeah, we really haven't talked at all about Michael's real drag racing history and stuff like that. But I mean, between talking about his drag racing history and more of his accomplishments, and like you said, the car itself, and then getting into every single year, all the different events that he's putting on. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that we need to have Michael on essentially a lot more often than we are. But at the same point in time, we also now have John Cira on the line as well, right?
John, how are you?
Good, buddies. How are you?
We're doing okay. Because John's getting ready for the High Rollers this weekend, right?
So, yeah. And
we're all coming up Labor Day weekend.
Next weekend.
Yeah, right.
Weekend. Yeah. Labor Day weekend.
We're getting rushed at home into my kid's birthday. So it's Labor Day tomorrow from now until after Labor Day.
Well, yeah. And I knew this was the last opportunity that we had, because we only do a show every other week. This was the last opportunity that we had to have John on before the High Roller race. So. Right. So, John, you expanded. So the foot brake race is still 16 cars, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you've expanded the box class to 32 cars.
I did. I made it 16 last year because it was tough to keep it full. Got close to being time, and I didn't want to have any buy runs or this or that, and
right.
It got hard to fill 32 with breakage then and this and that. So last year I decided to make it 16, and what my dilemma was this year is, people love coming to Jerry's to race, and he's done a lot to the joint, and it's very, very, people want to race there. And then, I had announced it, and then I left my desk, came back 15 minutes later, and I had, 15 messages and PayPal deposits, and why don't you try 32, blah, 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 blah. I just sent a deposit, and I'm just like, for them guys, there's a lot of interest. We'll make the push to 32 again.
Sure.
That's how it used to be for 4 or 5 years. I made it 16 once, and now the no box side, I left at 16, but the box guys seem to want to go for it, so who am I to deny them?
If you make it elite, people want to be part of it. When you cut it down to 16 and you start telling people no, more and more people start to come.
Well, and then I, it filled up so fast, and I was just like, we'll make the push to go to 32. And now I know that I could run into the same problem last year and as 2 years ago and only end up with 30, but that's a problem we'll cross when it gets there. We can still pay the 10 at 30 cars. We'll just make it 10 and 2 instead of 10 and 3.
Right. So at this point, there are still openings for the box class.
Yeah, I got a couple, two or three in each, I believe. I don't have my list in front of me because I'm solving world problems at work right now. But,
okay.
I believe I have two to four in box, and maybe the same amount in no box with you know, it's the same thing every year where everyone's probably, I might end up raffling a couple spots.
Right.
We'll get it there. We always do.
So do you hear that, Michael? There's some spots open for you.
Michael probably got somewhere that way. Labor Day weekend is a big weekend. He probably has already spoken for. His schedule's been pretty packed with bracket racing, and we appreciate that. He came to the 75 hundos. He's never been to Empire before, and it seemed like he had a good time. So hopefully he comes back. But yeah, he's been on quite the tear lately. He's been a runner-up specialist. I hope, you know. Oh, actually, you did win the 64 car deal at Quaker, did you not?
I did. Had a good time. I finally found somebody that I could accidentally turn on a wind light against, and it wasn't a bottom bulb guy. It was so curious because I've run it up so much that it's, you know, when somebody wins all the time, they'll root against you, but people were taking pity
That's
on
true.
Me. They're like, please just let them win one, really.
That's true.
I'll definitely be back for your 75 hundos next year. That was a fantastic race, and I really enjoyed my time at Empire Dragway. So I highly recommend anybody that's in the region, go check out John Thier and what he's got going on.
Perfect. Thank you very much for the endorsement. Next, I just came from the track yesterday, and we're going to do some Jerry's already got a list of, you know, he puts everything he makes back into the place. He's a 69-year-old retired guy that loves racing, so he puts on for us, and he does whatever the people want, and we're going to do some staging lane modifications and extend them all the way back, and he's got some other stuff planned already, and we're grateful for Jerry to have a nice place that really not a lot of people know about. I mean, Michael has been everywhere and was never been there before. There's a bunch of other people that are like, what, that place is where, and it's how far from my house? 4 hours? Like Nick Hastings was like, I didn't know this place was here, and it's 4 hours from his house, so it's glad to bring some new blood back to the place that didn't know about it.
When was the last time you saw Jerry without a to-do list?
I was there yesterday, and he had his grandkids there, and he had a couple other guys, and he was mowing down trees in the one area. He's balls to the walls all the time at 69 years old. So we're grateful to have him.
It's his own to-do list. It's not like other people are telling him what he has to do. It's like, oh, yeah, I got to get this done.
Right, right.
Just constant state of improvement.
Yeah, and it's really nice. I mean, it's super nice. I mean, now it's amazing because the tracks around here were very stagnant for a long period of time, and now we have a great owner with Jerry owning Empire, and now with Mike Swinarski and Vito Antonicelli buying Lancaster, it's like now we have owners that are interested and engaged and now want to make improvements. And I have not been to Lancaster yet this year, but all I've heard is good things about all the cosmetic things that they've been doing there to try and clean it up and make it look nicer. And I'm sure they have a ton of improvements planned for there as well for next season. I mean, they didn't even buy the track until, geez, I think I want to say it was April 1st maybe when the deal was official. But now I think we're going to get spoiled, right? Because now we actually have people that want to put money into the track and make it a better place. And, geez, for so many years around here, it was just like, well, yeah, I mean, this is our local track. It is what it is. We should feel lucky it's open. So I just hope that everybody gets to the point where we all play nice together. Right? Mm. I hope it doesn't turn into any sort of competition there.
Ah, you see that on the horizon.
Yeah. Well, it was John. John said this. I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But yeah, the nice thing is the fact that obviously Mike knows Jerry and Vito knows Jerry. So yeah, hopefully we'll be able to make this work. But okay, so we got a couple spots open in each, and foot brake race, John, is $5,000 to win.
Yes, sir.
And so for those that don't know, so it's $500 to enter each one, right?
Yes, sir. It's $5,000 to win no box. It's no box, not foot brake. It is no box. Okay. Not allowing trans brake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, the box side is also $500, and that's a $10,000 to win purse.
Okay. And no buybacks, right?
No buybacks. Nope. I'm going to go. We draw chips at the base of the tower or up in the viewing area. We draw chips for the ladder, and we run the ladder all the way down until there's one remaining.
Wow.
Each.
No buybacks.
It's a good time. No buybacks. It's just, you know, some people are like, well, if I put up $500 and I make a snafu first round and I lose, you know, I wish there was buybacks. And I go, I understand that, but I mean, also, you know, no buybacks is cool. That's how there was a time in racing where we had no buybacks. Right. So
I live it at every event. And most events that I compete in, I say to myself, thank God there aren't buybacks, because I'd just be donating my money to to the track. So, but, yeah, I mean, that's why it's a high roller race, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, so. I thought that a no buybacks format was better. I mean, it's something to keep the show moving a little bit, because at that point in the day, you know, I run it after Jerry's, that's right. 1500 to win both classes. Then we run it at the conclusion of that.
Yep.
So, you know, I try and be done in an hour and a half or so. I mean, his crew has been there since, you know, 8, 9 in the morning, and now it comes to be 8, 9 at night. You're working on 12 hours, and we start at 10 o'clock in the morning the next day. So, you know, I kind of want to get it done for them, and adding buybacks would just add to it. And, you know, luckily, you know, Jerry lets me do that, and doesn't take much out of the purse either. So it's no buybacks is where we'll stay on the high roller.
Well, and the thing that people wanted, I mean, one of the allures of the race was, you know, with 16 cars, it was, look, it's exclusive, it's 16 cars, it's 4 rounds for $5,000. That's what one of the allures of the race was.
Right.
So, yeah, you start doing buybacks, and it just adds to that. So, I mean, I like the format the way it is. I would stick with it if it were me, but
we're gonna keep it. It's been working. This is the seventh one I've done, so we'll just keep it that. Maybe down the line some will tweak it a little bit, but it seems to work the way it is. It's something that it's not a huge deal, but this is something that a lot of guys do look forward to every year. That, you know, not something that we do very often in this area. Like, we have little to no big money. Well, when I say big money, a 10 and a 5 nowadays is on the smaller scale of things when there's 20s and 50s and 100s.
Right.
So, I mean, in this area, it's a purse that everyone in this area looks for, because not a lot of the guys in our area do a lot of traveling. So this is, like, one of the main things they look forward to. And, you know, the 7500s has been around for 2 years now, so they look forward to that. And because this big money racing, or higher money racing, is something that's, you know, we've talked about it before, is irrelevant to this area where no one does it outside of Vince's 10s and the 7500s, and then the little high roller deal in Labor Day. No, there is nothing around here unless you want to go 4 or 5 hours away, which is fine, but a lot of weekly guys, you know, will not or don't want to do that for whatever reason. Branching out is scary for some, or they don't, you know, they don't think they can hang and whatnot, but for whatever reason, you know, the three races we have a year, people look forward to them, so I'm happy to be able to provide that, and for Jerry for letting us do that and take chances, and, you know.
Well, I will say that I don't know what the secret is to draw people in from out of town, but it seems like that Mr. Beard knows very well on how to do that. So who knows? Maybe at some point in time, now that Michael has been to Empire, maybe Loose Rocker will want to work with you and Empire to try and put one of these big dollar bracket races on in our backyard.
Yeah, I mean, the first year I had 152. Last year, you know, Jerry paid the money.
Yep.
He said, you know, the check stays $7,500. It's a year one deal. I mean, Peter and Kyle at the Spring Fling were talking about shutting it down after 1 year because they had not a lot of entries. But now look at them, and Michael can maybe speak to that in a little bit in his own aspect. But, I mean, we had 152 year one. Year two, we had 189 with a bad forecast. One of my favorite analogies, Michael, is the weather entertainment people. Sometimes get it right, sometimes don't, and it hinders car counts when, you know,
right.
It ends up being a beautiful day. But, I mean, it's growing, and, you know, Jerry said the first year, he's like, we'll take a loss year one. He goes, I'm not worried about that. I've spent more money worse ways for advertising. He said, for people to come and see the place, you know, that's the best advertising you could have. And we paid the money, and he took a loss, and we got some of that back year two. He goes, the check stays $7,500. That is what we're running for. And I think a lot of people respected that and spread the word, and now it's starting to come around, and maybe next year I can get 205, 210, and we'll maybe we can grow it into a little something a little bigger. But, I mean, you got to start somewhere. Nothing's great. Nothing's ever as good as it can be year one, in my opinion.
No, I agree. I completely agree.
And I think it would be a lot of fun.
What's that?
If we showed up, we rode to a racetrack that had buybacks, right?
Yeah.
And we show up in your Malibu.
Yeah.
And we go to the window.
Yeah.
Say, what's the entry fee? Run just through. Here's the entry fee. And what's buybacks tonight? And they're like, well, where's your car? No. The question was, what was buybacks? Okay,
just pay him right up front.
Money. We'll be in the grandstands if you do this.
Well, I mean, I guess that's the thing. I mean, right, with John, what will the slowest car be in the no box class?
For the high roller?
Yeah.
Right, well, unless Daniel Nabb enters, which he hasn't yet, but, you know, last year he was dialed, you know, 11:20 in it.
Yeah.
But in the eighth. But, I mean, I think right now it's like 7:50.
What were you saying, Mike?
So nothing, no.
There was a street car that was laying everybody out at the 7500s. I think made it to the finals.
That's cool.
Oh, on on Friday night. Was it Friday night? Jim Subchinsky.
Yes.
Say that one three times fast. He had made a run in no box in his Impala down to the semis, I believe, one week. Maybe it was the 7500s. I'm not positive. I'm getting a little older, so
I think it was Friday night, because I'd actually gotten deep on one of them, and I think it was a Friday night until I ran into Dagnolo, because that wasn't going to work out well. But
yeah, so it's possible. It's very possible. John doesn't discriminate. If you show up with your $500, you too can get into the high roller race. So
I tell you what, I've spent many a years in my early days, before I had means of race car and whatnot, I've spent many of days racing in a Buick Century or a Cutlass. I've spent lots of time looking over my shoulder because all I had was my street car, and it can be done. I made a lot of money with cars that probably shouldn't be at the racetrack, so it can be done.
Right, absolutely.
I mentioned Northern Michigan Dragway earlier.
Yeah,
there's a kid there. Ben Wenzel Jr. Mm-hmm. If the name sounds familiar, Ben Wenzel Sr. is the guy with the A stick Camaro that won Indy a few years ago. Original Camaro. It's still got the window sticker and the whole bit. His son is racing at Northern Michigan Dragway with a basically stock Cavalier that they just got it in the nines in the eighth mile like a few weeks ago. When I was up there, it was going 10 teens. And he will run every class they have, which is like four classes, street trophy, pro trophy, which is a phrase I'd never heard put together before, but pro trophy, and bracket one and bracket two. And he'll foot brake against the boxcars. And he was actually leading the points for a while at the beginning of the year.
Wow. That's awesome.
Low 10 seconds, basically stock Cavalier. Awesome. That's cool.
Yeah, it's a testament to, if you're good, you can win in anything. So, John, I know that you're fighting crises. You're fighting crises at work, and we have Bill Fritzky kind of standing by. We want to talk about the Maris family benefit that they're putting on. So we're going to cut you loose. Appreciate you coming on the show and giving us a little preview of the high roller races. And look forward to watching those in a couple of weeks. Or not this weekend, but you know, the weekend after, Labor Day weekend.
Labor Day weekend. Thank you guys for having me on. Michael, good talking to you. We'll see you somewhere down the line, I'm sure.
You too, buddy. Can't wait to see you, and best of luck with your shootouts.
Thank you, sir. Probably going to see you in November. We just bought a double open. Me and Tim Fletcher are talking about going, making the trek down there for the two races and staying during the week, so hopefully we see you then.
Yeah, hopefully the big old truck is staying in one piece for you, and be great to have you down one day. And I appreciate all your support. Look forward to working with you next year.
Everything's brand new. Yeah, we broke an oil pump, I broke gears, I broke a drive shaft and a tranny in the past 2 weeks. So she's all brand new now, so hopefully we can keep her together for a month. hopefully we see you down there.
Good deal.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John. We'll see you later. Goodbye. John Sear, we're going to shift gears quick and get Bill in line to talk a little bit about the Maris family benefit program he's been actively working on.
I can't believe that Cavaliers doing so well up in Michigan. That's basically stock. It's all about being consistent.
Right. That's it. It's hard, though, with a streetcar, for sure.
No question.
Yeah, it's hard.
Bill, it's Chris. Can I put you in? There we go.
So, Bill, you're there.
Monday.
I'm here.
Monday on the Crash Course, I had three guests all on the phone alone. Never once did I erroneously mute my mic.
Yeah, I would say it's impressive. That's impressive. Thanks for standing by, Bill. I really appreciate you hanging out and waiting a few minutes. We had a catastrophe, I guess, but then the catastrophe was averted, and so now we're a few minutes late. But appreciate you hanging out with us.
It's not a problem.
So I guess for those that don't know, so longtime racer from Lancaster, I should say from Grand Island, but racing at Lancaster, Kevin Maris and his family were in a terrible car accident is it in Lake Placid? Is that where it happened?
Yeah, it was around Lake Placid area.
And I'm assuming that they were just up there on vacation, essentially?
Yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't know all the details. It really doesn't make a difference, but sadly, Kevin was killed. His family, his wife and two daughters, right, were both all seriously injured in the crash as well.
Yeah, his wife was listed in critical condition afterwards. I do believe that she's making some progress, and things are looking hopeful. The daughters will physically be okay in time.
Okay.
One had a leg injury, and the other one was cut up a little bit and bruised up, but they'll heal from their physical wound.
Right. Yeah.
What's going on with their parents? That's going to be a long time for them.
Yep. No, I can. I have to say, I can only imagine what they are going through. It has to be absolutely terrible.
No, you can't.
Then that's what I mean. You really can't imagine, right? I mean, there's just no doubt. It's got to be absolutely terrible. And I guess, on the plus side, the community has kind of rallied to try to get together to do a benefit for the family. And I know you're a big, big part of this. I personally didn't know Kevin all that well. I guess how far back did you and Kevin go?
We went pretty much back to when I started racing. He was already racing, and my first year I happened to find a pit spot next to him, and either I needed help or he needed help, and we were just kind of there for each other.
Yep.
We introduced ourselves, and it just went from there, and it just kept becoming a thing. I mean, every week he was there helping me crew. I had my dad. My son was just born at the time, and
okay.
So it was just me and my dad. And if my dad wasn't, he couldn't get back and forth from where we pitted to the wall in much of a hurry. So if we happened to go late rounds, I was lucky to have Kevin there.
Yeah.
He was always there. He was there for everybody and anybody.
Yep. Yeah, and that's what my understanding, again, I didn't really know Kevin that well, but my understanding is that just an extremely great guy, and out of the track, was willing to help anybody and really do anything that was necessary to help those people out. And obviously he was a competitor, he liked to win, but I think Sharon, I saw the interview that Sharon did on WKBW, and she said that Kevin was happy regardless who the winner was, and if it was his competitor that won, he was equally as happy for him, just as if he had won the round.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's certainly very, very sad, and obviously our thoughts and prayers go out to his entire family. For now, the I guess task at hand is this benefit that you've been working very, very hard to put together, right?
Yeah, it actually started out like kind of Monday night. By the time I the first person I contacted after I heard of his death was Sharon.
Okay.
Because I knew she had done this stuff before, and I've never done this in my life. So But I wanted to do something for the family because they were just an incredible family.
Yep.
They really were. Kevin gave you the shirt off his back. His wife was the same way. You know, just great people, very friendly, and I've never seen Kevin mad in the 20 years that I knew him, other than that himself. If he caught a bad light, he'd be a little angry with himself for a while, but he got over it.
Yeah, right.
You know, and, you know, just, I don't know. Kevin helped me for, you know, 15, 16 years that I was racing, and he was there every week just about. I could count on one hand the amount of weeks that I didn't have him there helping me, and he was pulling double duty as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Racing and crewing for me. So, I don't know. We haven't raced in a few years, but we always kept in touch, and we always, you know, caught up, and, you know, life took over, so.
Right. Well, it happens, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, we go on temporary retirement for a while, and we always wind up back there.
Right, right.
But, yeah, we kept in touch, and, you know, we call each other once in a while and just catch up on, you know, life.
Yep, yep. So, at this point, tomorrow night at Lancaster, you're going to be there. You have been soliciting and collecting bottles of booze from people, right?
Yep.
And tomorrow night is going to be a raffle at Lancaster, is that correct?
Yeah, it's kind of loosely organized because we didn't have a whole lot of time to put it together.
Right.
And any contact I've had with Sharon or Sylvia from the track, it's been over the phone. So we haven't really discussed anything in person with each other to try and figure out ticket prices or anything else.
Yep.
We're just kind of winging it. It's more of a hip shot effort just to get some instant relief for the family.
Sure.
Because they're, you know, Kevin's wife and one daughter is still in Vermont, so, you know, they still got their everyday bills coming in.
Right.
And, you know, they're just going to need a lot of help. The family is a very tight family, very close family, and I do believe that they got a very good support system amongst themselves, as well as from everyone in the racing community. I've been overwhelmed with the response that I've gotten out of everyone. I really am.
Yeah. So if people would like to help out, I mean, obviously going to Lancaster tomorrow and buying tickets at the track for the raffle, that's certainly one way. I know you're also just accepting donations, right? Is there a GoFundMe page, or how would somebody donate? If they just want to donate money, how would they do that?
At this point in time, we're just going to be collecting donations at the track. There's going to be tickets available for the raffles. The family's in the process of setting up an account for the girls.
Okay.
And so this, like I said, this is just off the hip deal, and, you know, just trying to get something together to raise a few bucks for the family, just to, for whatever they need.
Yeah.
At the moment.
Yeah. It was only last week that the accident occurred, right?
Saturday morning.
Yeah, so I mean, it hasn't even been a week yet. So I mean, yeah.
But
I mean, to your point, I mean, obviously, you know, from a cost of living standpoint, I mean, all of this stuff is still going on, and obviously, the two money earners for the household, one unfortunately is gone, and the other one is completely incapacitated, and so I mean, yeah, we obviously need to try and get them some relief somehow.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we certainly, you know, really appreciate the efforts that you're putting into this. I guess I would tell people that, you know, if they wanted to potentially, you know, either, you know, donate a bottle of booze, I don't know if the track, I'm hoping the track would allow them to bring it and, like, give it at the gate.
Yeah, Sharon is actually encouraging that. If you come out tomorrow, bring a bottle, two bottles, three bottles, 10 bottles, it don't matter.
Yep.
Hand it off at the gate. That will go up for auction, and if you just want to make a donation, we'll have people set up in an area which is yet to be announced, that we'll be collecting donations. If you can't make it to the track tomorrow, you can always contact me or Sharon.
Yep.
And any money could be, any donations could be forwarded to us, and we will make sure that it gets into the account.
Right, right. Okay. All right. Well, I think that's good. I mean, certainly I would say...
I shared the link to that post that Bill made earlier today.
Oh, you did?
That
okay.
It's on the post underneath the show, so everybody can just... If you're looking at the show, just scroll down. The link is right there.
It'll that's
take
perfect.
You right. That's got Sharon's phone number on it. It's got the information about when and where coming up this weekend, and it's got Bill's phone number on it as well.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. And, yeah, I will do the same. I will share that on my Facebook page, too, so that everybody sees it. And, yeah, we'll try and raise as much money for the family as we possibly can.
I appreciate it, guys.
Hey,
thanks, Bill. We appreciate you going above and beyond like this for your buddy.
Well, he's that's what I'm here for. He's a friend. You know, yeah. He was a true friend and a genuine person.
Yeah, he's. I know he's going to be missed.
I couldn't say enough about him. Yeah. I really couldn't. He's just a great guy.
Yeah,
well, I hope you pack it on. I hope you pack it at Lancaster this weekend.
I really hope so.
We wish you the best of luck. If you need anything else, check in with us. Let us know how things are going. Okay.
I will do. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks,
Bill. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, guys.
You know. There goes Bill Fritzky again. All the information for Bill has been shared. His phone number is on the post, 716-525-2806, 716-525-2806, if you want to get a hold of Bill and make some donations to the Morris family as they go through a ugly, ugly time.
Oh, yeah. Terrible. Absolutely terrible, for sure. And I will say it's a great show. And it's a real bummer to end on that note, right? I mean, a really great conversation with Michael. You get John Searer on, who's really upbeat and, you know, full of energy. And I guess...
Monday, we had to start with this, too.
Yeah.
We had another car in Powell. I think it was the Powell County Fair. In Deer Lodge, Montana.
Uh-huh.
And when the other car was struck, the throttle hung open, it cleared a barrier, it went through the fence, it ran over an EMT, and it crashed into the grandstands. And it took the life of the EMT, and it was a bad, bad scene.
Wow.
But the news was all over it, which of course painted all the
right.
competitors. It was bad. It was bad. And then we had another deal like this a couple of years ago where... some people did the same thing that Bill did. They jumped up off the bench immediately and started doing stuff. And it only took about a week before the donations overtook everybody's generosity.
Yep.
And because nothing formal had been created, they started pointing fingers and accusatory and all this other stuff. So if it is as sensitive a time as this is, get your paperwork straight.
Right.
Fast.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
And
yeah.
If you're afraid that you're going to sit back and question where all this stuff's going, don't donate yet. Wait till the paperwork.
Yeah. 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 I'm hoping that they'll get the what do they call it? Not a foundation,
right.
But something like that. I hope they get
the
that created.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Trust. Yes. Thank you. I hope they get that created pretty soon, and then create a GoFundMe, right? Because people are certainly willing to basically donate to those types of things.
Then there's no other. It doesn't go anyplace else.
Yeah.
From one point to another.
And Bill and Sharon will be able to be completely hands off as well. So yeah,
I'm not picking on them. I'm not. I've seen this happen.
Oh yeah, no.
It really is gross the way that people begin treating other people. From the outsider's perspective, looking in,
the
people on the inside are doing everything right.
Right, right. Well, hopefully they'll raise some money here pretty quickly at the track tomorrow and kind of get them through this tough spot. And at that point, we can start. Going above and beyond and trying to, I'm assuming that if Kevin's wife, and again, I don't know the extent of her injuries, but obviously if she's in critical condition, they're not minor. My guess is that she's got a pretty long road ahead of her from a rehabilitation standpoint that they're going to need some help. So hopefully we can get them a little bit of help here.
And Mike has waited on the wings with us. You know, able to have a little bit of a conversation with John. We appreciate you coming and being part of this one. And we certainly want to give you a chance. If we missed anything, that would be a great time to let us know what we may have overlooked.
Well, as Jason said, we could probably talk for hours and hours and hours. So we'll put your listeners through that all in one shot at least. But I really appreciate the opportunity to be on with you guys and definitely enjoyed the show. And look forward to hearing more from you guys.
Well, we'll definitely want to have you on again. And just one thing, clarify, I am 99% sure of this. You were the original creator of the NHRA website, correct?
Yes.
I knew I was right.
So now it means I'm lying. Didn't go, it didn't go live with me, though. The first time that it went public, it was under goracing.com. But the original concept was actually for National Dragster Online.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I did over spring break in college one year. Wow. Instead of to the beach and partying like I think kids are supposed to do, I hung out at the computer lab, and Phil Burgess, the editor of National Dragster, and yep. I worked on creating what eventually became from ND Web, you know, National Dragster
right.
Web, or to NHRA Online. So, yeah, it was just a teeny tiny bit of a resume. The ironic part is I actually did end up doing a drag racing sanctioning body website for real.
Yeah.
When I went to work for IHRA in the Bill Bader era.
Right. Right. Yeah. And again, you know, we didn't even touch on any of that stuff, but well, I mean,
now I'm like, I want to know more now.
Oh, there's a ton of interesting stuff there for sure. I mean, when I was not joking when I basically said when the internet was invented, that's when Mike and I started talking, and that's the God's honest truth. It's like, yeah, you had a couple of computer dorks, essentially, that, this internet's kind of cool. And, yeah, next thing you know, it's like they're like the only two drag racing computer dorks that are on the internet at that point in time. So,
the internet crashed, and then the cool guy found Jason.
That's right.
Jason and I have never been threatened with the title of cool, I don't think. But when I was in college and started working with Phil Burgess on that deal, I'd started Staging Light when I was in college, which actually started out as Michael Beard's Guide to Bracket Racing, which,
yep.
looking back, it's pretty rudimentary stuff now. But I actually got an email from Dave McClellan that basically said, "Nice site." I was like, "Oh my god!"
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Very nice.
Yeah, well, we're definitely going to have you on again in the future, and definitely would love to kind of talk about all this type of stuff in a little bit more detail with you, Michael.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I think we did fairly decent for having zero plan going into this. We covered a lot of ground.
It's very free flow here. There's no such thing as a script. This is what we plan with right here. I'll show everybody at home. This is our show notes. Right there. Other than what we traded back and forth through messages the last couple of days, putting everything together. But that's it's pretty free form and fluid, and I don't know. I think I like it better that way, because it feels more authentic. It's more of a conversation than an interview.
Everybody, well, I won't say everybody, but there are plenty of people that are very nervous about coming on the show. And I tell them there's nothing to be nervous about. It's just a couple of guys sitting around talking about drag racing. That's all it is. I mean, I've had people ask me all the time, what should I, research or study up on beforehand? It's like, there's nothing you need to research or study up on.
You know your own history?
That's just it.
Then good.
Right, yeah. If you can remember where you were and what you did, then you're good. You don't need anything else. And, yeah, I like it. I like it in this format. Granted, I'm sure there's plenty of people that are like, geez, this guy should do some research, but that's...
We also need to know more about all of the Mopars that preceded the Velari, and how we got into the Mopars, and what motor combinations the Mopars had in them, and all that other stuff, but another show for another time.
You got it. Yep, you got it.
Michael, man, again, we appreciate you making some time for us and coming on. I'm glad we gave you a little bit of downtime in the middle of the show, so hopefully you can finish that graphic you were working on.
I actually did that during the show.
and we'll catch up with you next time, whenever next time might be. And in between then, good luck at the track, and stay safe.
Great. Thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. Take care.
Bye.
There it goes. Michael. So, we handled three. We did okay-ish.
Yeah.
A little rough. A couple rough spots. The surprise crises threw me off.
It threw me off a little bit too.
And set up so I can make a phone call, and then nobody answered, and then you're like, talk. I'm like, okay.
Well, I was then trying to get to, I was trying to move Bill up at that point in time, so I was messaging him, and just as he's like, yeah, okay, I'm like, Chris is going to call you in a minute, and then the phone rings, and it was John calling in.
Right.
So, anyways, but yeah, I mean, we got through it. Hopefully people will see that it was, hopefully it was entertaining.
If nothing else, they'll see that it was live.
That's right, exactly.
What do you think? We've covered everything there's to say on number 67. That's going to do it for us here at the North Park Building at Academy Square. We appreciate everybody tuning in and hanging out with us. Number 67 is in the books. We're going to be back again. We're going to be talking a little bit of Lancaster.
Yes. Together. So Gary, Jason will be joining us in 2 weeks in the studio.
So we'll be doing that. And I guess that'll keep us covered until we get on the backside of the High Rollers at Empire.
You got it.
We'll see everybody next time.
This has been the Final Round Drag Racing Podcast, coming to you live from the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. We'll see you right back here again in 2 weeks. Thanks for watching.